to protect him because feminists who pick up on his words will go crazy. But I hope I built the proper fence. It's going. Okay, today is, yesterday was quite a shiur, but yesterday was yesterday. Let's handle today. I don't think I have one student here. It's just unbelievable. This is the reality. No, the place is empty because Torah Shraga is away. They're in Eilat. But here, they have other shurim that put pressure on them, and the result is what you see. It's a gradual process. It wasn't like this in the 70s into the 80s into the early 90s. And then the art scroll generation came to the fore. You follow? And the art scroll generation has to work three times as hard in Gemara and Shulchan Aruch because they don't know Hebrew. They don't know Lashon HaKodesh. They're from a different world. Okay, today is Monday, the 3rd of February, 2014. And while you expect snow in New York, we can't get any rain here and the weather gets nicer and nicer. Good for humans, bad for the ground and the economy. Before I begin the shiur, quite a number of comments came in from all over the world, and one of them goes back to what may have been last year, a few years ago. Reb Baruch Ben Leibovich spent the Shabbat at the home of Rabbi Raymond in New Jersey. And this was a brother-in-law to Rabbi Pinchas Teitz. And the question has come up time and again, what happened when the girl sang Zmirat? If you're familiar with Making of a Gadol, Rabbi Kamenetsky has various quotes on it. And here I have a comment from a student of mine from the Kollel. Evan Abrahams was a student in 1998 in Gris Kollel. And he's married to a student of mine, Rivki Raymond, who's a granddaughter of Rabbi Pesach Raymond. And he tells me, Rebbetzin Chana Raymond, Zichrono Levracha, gave me Eidut Nemanah, having sat across from Reb Baruch Ben Leibovich, that he sat there while she sung Zmiras. And he said they are singing praises to God. And he listened very comfortably. There is no question, or did he or did he not walk out. Please don't equivocate on that one. So I want to tell you, this is Eidut Nemanah from a Rebbetzin. I know the family. She sang, and Reb Baruch Ben sat there. So that, for me, ends any question and all the various stories about what happened that Shabbat in New Jersey. We mentioned about the Rakat Shava, that the halacha is generally not like him because he was such a genius, no one could comprehend him. So my Talmud, Yonas Imberger, made the analogy to the Gemara Neiruvim Daf Yud Gimel Amid Bet, that the Gemara says we don't paskin like Rabbi Meir because he was so profound, no one could comprehend the depth of what he was saying. So I want to tell Yonas Imberger, he's exactly right. That's exactly what the Rakat Shava, the Rabbi Gedolei Yisrael, that was so profound that we don't paskin like them. La halacha, we have to paskin by people who ordinary mortals could comprehend. Another question that came up, coming now down to our class, Nachum Lam asked me, why did Rabbi Schwab contact Rabbi Chanan and other Litvishe Gedolim? After all, he had his own Mesorah from Rav Hirsch. Why ask people who we probably could assume were not as positive? So I want to tell Rabbi Nachum, I want to tell Nachum Lam, Nachum, you are a sinner. He's married, wife is expecting. You are a sinner. You have to take off 40 years and listen to the lectures of someone named Darren Rakefet and YUTorah.org. What Rakefet didn't deal with this? I don't know. 13 years ago, 14 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, in my lectures on the history of Torah in modern times, I went into Germany in depth, and Germany was a replay of Yeshiva University, the 60s into the 70s. Black is beautiful. The whole swing. Yashakayach, Yashakayach. You're missing. Join us. The whole swing to the right, Chesky. What went on in the 70s and the 80s, and I had come with him last year who gave me hell. Rebbe, you had no right to go in Aliyah. Oh, you should have remained in America. And they, what would they were praising me that I didn't swing to the right, that I'm not black. Baruch Hashem, I don't know if it's a praise or not, but I told these guys, wow, if you're familiar with Everyone Loves Raymond, what's Raymond's wife's favorite name for him, favorite nomenclature, favorite adjective? Idiot. I said, you guys are a bunch of idiots. Had I been in America, 60s, 70s, I would have been like everyone else. I would have swung to the right. Rakefet retained a certain independence and uniqueness that's due to living a Latmat HaKodesh, 100%. Here I already saw the right wing. Believe me, no one... I button my lips. Baruch Hashem. Ahavat Yisrael wins out. We'll put it that way. But no one can entice me to be right wing after living here 45 years. Take my word for it. So what happened in Germany was they came after World War I. They came to Litter. They came during World War I. I don't want to repeat all my lectures. And they saw Litvische Gedolim. They were overwhelmed. Rav Hirsch went out the back door. And doesn't this continue in Kehilat Adat Yeshurin in Tul today? Haven't there been, were there actually fist fights coming, Charlie? How bad were the fights where they just walked out in anger? So Nachum, tell your wife she has to support you. You're taking off 40 years like a Talmud should, and you're going to listen lecture by lecture. But now let's roll in to our lectures. So, what did we speak about? We spoke about that after World War II, the yeshiva wanted to organize a college, but Reb Aaron already was so influential, no college, application withdrawn. And we're talking about an application. Do me a favor, put it down on the lowest level so it shouldn't get too hot. Another, you know what I'm talking about, where it blows in, and also change it to 22. And if we feel cold, we can change it back. Yashikayach. So, Reb Aaron, no college. Someone who grew up in that world, Henry Silberman, writes to me occasionally, and Eidut Nemana, all the yeshiva allowed their students to go to college at night. However, Miri Yeshiva gave the most trouble to those who wanted to go. They would restrict those they permitted to go to 2 nights per week. Many did not permit to go at all. Tells in Philadelphia understandably, a shoot-off of Lakewood, the first shoot-off of Lakewood, or the first successful shoot-off of Lakewood, because there also was a shoot-off in Boston, Reb Leib Hyman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and that didn't catch on, but Philadelphia caught on. Tells in Philadelphia did not permit their Talmud to go to college at all. Near Yisrael, however, let them go. And that's an accurate description. It brings back many memories to me of what the Matzav was in the 50s into the 60s. But now we come to the absolute achievement. We read that memoir by Professor Philip Fishman about Torah Vedas, and fabulous little memoir. Later he breaks, he goes on, science, Boston, the Rav, Maimonides. But one tremendous problem, he writes that he went to Temple Emmanuel to hear Chazan David Kosovitsky. He was fined $3 And I got letters from all over the world that Koussevitzky, David, Temple Emanuel, conservative. And Philip Fishman writes Orthodox. And the Rebbe, yours truly, fined him an additional $2. Remember, $1 he was late, $2 that he missed Torah Vadas. And Ratefik went crazy. He's not exactly I know Ratefik very well. He's a zealot when it comes to reform, conservative, constructionism, etc. He's a zealot. Sometimes I have to smack his face. He's so, what a zealot. Brewery has to tell him off. You tamu chataim v'lo chaltim, Baruch Hashem. $2 more. Thanks to my student Chaim Schnitzer, who got in touch with Professor Fishman. Professor Fishman wrote me a beautiful, beautiful letter. He listened to the Shayurim. I don't want to read that part of the letter. I don't like to read things that compliment me for Musa reasons. But as you requested, I want to clear up some confusion that I caused about the Shulam Borough Park where I attended Slichus. Two of the leading Chazanim in New York during the 1950s were the brothers Moshe and David Koussevitzky. Moshe was Chazan at the Orthodox Temple Beth El, now Young Israel Beth El, that you point out is a magnificent building. David was the Chazan at the nearby Temple Emmanuel that was a major conservative synagogue. I believe this property was later purchased by the Bava Rebbe and torn down, which I believe to be correct. When I was about 15 years old, my older brother, who was then 28 years old, and a musmach of Torah Vadas, took me and a number of his fellow musmachim in his car from Williamsburg to Borough Park on Saturday night to hear Moshe doing slichus at Beth El. I am sure my brother would never then or now go to an unorthodox shul. In my original memoir on this topic, I mistakenly identified the Slichus experience as occurring at the Orthodox Temple Emmanuel with David Koussevitzky. After the essay was published, I realized my mistake. When the essay was recently republished in my book, A Sukkah is Burning, I removed the error and correctly identified the shul as Beth El and the chazan as Moshe Koussevitzky, page 54 of his new book. My dear friends, the $2 fine is rescinded and Baruch Hashem, we now hakol hamakomo higia b'shalom. One is conservative, one is orthodox. But it's even funnier than you think, because in Henry Silverman's answer, he writes that it was absolutely conservative. No one would go there who was orthodox. Even Beth El was considered problematic, because the bimah was not in the middle, but up front, and the Kriya HaTorah evidently was done facing the congregation. Anyone here from Borough Park will remember? I would imagine they changed that now, but it's true, Vic, this is the way it was. Why do you read the Kriya facing the congregation?
It was such a large shul, not every...
But a person says, Barco, he bows to the Balabatim? I don't get it. Bad enough where Rav Zitz Tabanon, the person says, Barco, he's bowing to the rabbi and the president. But this is the funny part. He says, neither Chazan was strictly orthodox. If you know the stories of Chazanim, I don't have to tell you, I don't want to mention names, but they say when one guy fell Kairim under his palace on Yom Kippur, he had a sandwich, and I have a feeling it was absolutely true. So he says, David Koussevitzky, who davened the conservative temple, he was much frummer than his brother Moshe, who davened in Beth El. So, Baruch Hashem, that story ends in dignity. But now we're ready to roll. Now, What I'm going to show you today is on the house, because the Rebbe is so happy that Professor Fishman wrote to him and we could solve the problem. Otherwise, for what I'm going to show you in a few minutes, it's 99,000 dollars linked to the shekel to the IOU list. Now, as I said, Reb Aaron was Reb Aaron, and Reb Aaron's influence in America, you have to have lived it and to understand what subsequently developed. Reb Aaron's influence was overwhelming. Now, Tells is a perfect example, and what we just heard about Tells, they didn't allow kids to go to college, and if you recall how I ended off last week's shiur, that Rav Shmuel Lazer Volk went through the ceiling. He was hysterical. He had a tremendous temper. He was a Kohen. So the word says, Kohanim have a temper. He was a Kohen. Whoa, he had a temper. And boy, when we mentioned to him Tells, he was vociferous. He was ballistic in his words of opposition to what happened to Tells in Cleveland. But Tells was Tells. This was no longer the influence, if you recall my lectures on Torah history, no longer the influence of German Orthodoxy that helped Tells out after World War I, and they organized, Rabbi Kalbach was involved, they organized Javna, the school for girls, they played a role with the gymnasium. This was Tells now under the influence of Reb Aaron. No college. Now, The World of the Yeshiva by William Helmreich, and I'm going to be quoting it extensively for today. Look into page, let me get the exact page, William Helmreich, The World of the Yeshiva, the book I quoted last week by William Helmreich. I just want to...
The publisher
is the Free Press, a division of Macmillan, and the year I don't have written down, but I would estimate it's the late 80s. It's a very important volume, I have to tell you. In retrospect, Professor Helmreich went on to publish many volumes. I knew him. We all knew him. Willie, very, very nice individual. By the way, I was corrected. I said he graduated MTA. I'm told he graduated Kamenetz Yeshiva High School. I don't know. In my head, I remember him from MTA. But I may be wrong. You have to check out his biography. And go to page 358. Note 47. So here, I mentioned this last week, he interviews Reb Mordechai Gifter, and he hits Reb Mordechai Gifter over the head, and he says to Reb Mordechai Gifter, you owe your Torah to what is today, Yeshiva University. When Reb Mordechai Gifter was a kid, didn't know how to learn, he didn't go to Yeshiva Katana, and he winds up in Talmudical Academy, and he winds up being a Talmud of Reb Aaron Moshe Pelev, and Reb Mordechai says, absolutely. Then he goes to Tells in Europe. But Reb Mordechai says, absolutely, I own my Torah. You're absolutely right. I don't deny it. I went to schools that are today Yeshiva University. And he says, but I'll tell you what bothers me. And he makes this comment, which I quoted last week, I believe, that when a kid goes to college from Chaim Berlin, he goes to college, Parnassa. When a kid goes to college at YU, he can have a wonderful feeling how beautiful general studies are. He can, when I was a student at Yeshiva, my love of Torah grew from there, from the Rebbeim there. But when I look back and see the effects of synthesis, it bothers me because it led to a search for beauty that is wrong. And he says, in Yeshiva College, it's not just for panasa. It's not just to get a job. In Yeshiva College, you can feel beauty, greatness in general studies, and that is absolutely wrong. My dear students, I say to Rabbi Gifter, what are you criticizing Yeshiva University? Go back 100 years. Criticize Rav Shemshon Fol Hirsch.
Ah, that's a hard, hard ladder to climb. Much harder to do. Rav Hirsch, who also the way Gedolei Yisrael from Hasidisha to Litvisha, the way they related to him, B'dechilu u'rechimu, Rav Hirsch. And now I'm going to quote to you, word by word, from Rav Hirsch. To tell you the inside story, we spoke about it 15 minutes ago, with the swing to the right. And by the way, the swing to the right gave birth to the swing to the left. Zalo Pashuk. If we're dealing with women putting on tefillin today, and Sar Academy encouraging it, to my humble opinion, from what I read, it's a counter-reaction. Swing to the right, up in Washington Heights, many of the Hirschians couldn't deal with what I'm about to quote. And there was a big machloket within. I know this because in his last years I became quite close to Mr. Jacob Breuer. Name mean anything to you? The man who was principal of Hirsch. You knew him. It was your principal. All right. We debated in the early 60s, a correspondence between us that's very strong, very, very nasty. And in later years, I was able to get a kiss from him in public. You know what it means to get a kiss from a yuck in public? You can check it out with Max Weil. I have witnesses yet. So he told me the inside story. When they started publishing the Gesammelte Schriften in English, the collected writings. See, the first one to publish was Diane Grunfeld. Do you remember the title? Judaism Eternal. So Judaism Eternal and a magnificent translation. Diane Grunfeld had a very docile pen. And you have selections. But when they decided, Feldheim, the committee, Washington Heights, they're going to publish everything. And they did publish something like 7 volumes, 8 volumes. There wasn't a 9th volume until a year and a half ago. Why? Why did it take so long? Because one of the most famous talks Rav Hirsch gave was on the, I believe it was, the 100-yard site of Schiller. Johann Friedrich Schiller, poet, dramatist, philosopher, and historian. Let me correct myself. Not the 100th yard site, but the 100th anniversary of his birth. Okay? What was Schiller's years? 1759 to 1805. Now, 1859, 100 years later, Rav Hirsch had recently arrived in Frankfurt. One of his first achievements. And remember, he came to Frankfurt. There was barely a million of Shomer Shabbos Jews there. You have to understand what he came to. And I've said this before, I say it again. The Rav once said in public at a either a Yahrzeit shir or some other public shir, the Rav had a sense of humor, and he said, you want to judge if a woman is a good balabusta, don't go by the way the living room looks, or the dining room, how the lavatories are kept, the bathrooms. So I've always applied that you want to judge the spiritual commitment of a community, don't go the way the shoe looks, the way the president's seat is padded, look at the way the mikveh looks. Rav Hirsch wrote, I quote, that the mikveh in Frankfurt when he came there was in a passageway fit only for swine to walk through, quote unquote. So, one of the first great things he did, he organized a, what we would call a yeshiva katana, and he organized a high school. This is the talk that Rav Hirsch gave to the high school kids in Frankfurt.
Is this a co-ed school?
Rav Hirsch worked as follows. The campus was co-ed,
but the boys and girls were separate. This talk may have been given to everybody. I mean, this is my feeling, but if someone can find memoir literature, we would know for sure. But the Hershey and Sheeta was very ingenious, that boys and girls should speak to each other, going to school, coming from school. It's important to, like we spoke about yesterday with the Lakewood Pasquale against the Nerev, and what my Talmud, Dr. Alan Blau, explained, that if what you have a Nerev, women go out in the streets on Shabbos, men might see women, and I don't want to go further. To me, it's offensive that every male is a male predator. Every male, all he thinks about is seducing women. This is a man, this is a Ben Torah, this is a Jew who is committed to God, to Torah, to Halacha. Very frightening to me. So Rav Hirsch had a beautiful shita that classes are separate, classes have to be separate. I want to ask you, how do you teach a Gemara in Ketuvit, Matzah Petach Patuach, to a mixed audience of men and women? Boys and girls, understand it, say that classes have to be separate. Every survey, every research in the world shows that women and men do better when they study in separate classes. When you put them together already, there's social tension, there's sexual tension, etc., etc. But Rav Hirsch had a very interesting shita, and that shita, when I came in Aliyah, I'm pretty sure it still goes on today in Katamon, that the elementary school boys and girls are on one campus, separate classes, one campus. So this is the talk he gave. I'm going to quote part of it. If the genius from whose spiritual legacy our young friends have just presented a few faint echoes would to return to life, in other words, these students had just quoted from Schiller's writing, and appear in our midst today, if my friends, we as Jewish men and women, were to meet Schiller today, then according to the wise teachings of our sages, we would have to welcome him with the words, Baruch Shenatan Mechachmato Labasavadam. Blessed be he who has imparted of his wisdom to mortal man. For our sages have taught us that whoever will behold something great or splendid, solemn or delightful, profoundly moving or delicately lovely, we are to pause and look up to him who has placed these things great or glorious, delightful, moving or solemn into the sphere of our perceptions. Indeed, our sages describe Jubin wisdom as a gift from God's wisdom. To our sages, all things good and beautiful, all things capable of enlightening the human mind, all things apt to pave the way for the voice of truth into the human heart, all things that make man's emotions receptive to beauty are reflective reflections of God's glory on earth. Similarly, our sages have taught us that anything capable of increasing human wisdom, human goodness, and true human happiness has its origins in Chachmato, God's own wisdom. The wisdom of mortals mirrors the wisdom of God. It is an echo of his spirit that lives upon the lips of the mortal surge. Therefore, our sages teach us to say, Baruch Shenatan Mechachmato LeBasavadam, that all praise is due to him who has given of his own wisdom to mortals. Rabbi Reuben, who is Rav Hirsch saying this about? A Gentile, an author, a poet, an essayist. Look at these words. And these words are being said to young men and women who are being educated
in Torah. Who else has understood like Shulah how to clothe truths destined to redeem the world and mankind in the lovely form of stylistic beauty, in the appropriate word, in speech that can win hearts and minds? Who else has understood like Shiva how to sing of freedom, of virtue, and of God himself? Words of faith that still delight the hearts of men today and that are happily embraced as expressions of one's own most sacred thoughts. Who else like Shiva understood how to enter into the circle of the family, praising the woman, the wife, the happiness of home and family in all their dignity, in all their lofty significance, and in their blissful intimacy? Who else has understood like Shiva how to sing from within the mortal heart of that infinite eternity, of that lofty eternal goal which mankind has been called upon to attain and toward which every individual is expected to strive? Who has ever expressed these ideals in more forceful, more enthusiastic terms than Shiva? And I can go on and on. I mean, this, wow. Rabbi Gifta, if you're going to criticize YU for giving its students a feeling that there is wisdom in the world, beauty in the world, achievement, insight, devotion, spirituality, wisdom, vision, YU pales by comparison compared to Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. And then he goes on to quote Shiva. The English translation is very interesting. They took it from a volume that was published in Britain in 1884, so that the English of Schiller's poetry, some of it is not exactly the English we would use today. As though heavens expand so glorious in their orbit, suns roll on. Brethren, this your proud race run, glad as warriors, all victorious. Mortals meekly wait for heaven, suffer on in patient love, in the starry realms above, bright rewards by God are given. And the essay goes on and on. Faith to keep each promise spoken, truth alike to friend and foe, neath kings frowns a manly spirit. Brethren, noble is the prize, honor due to every merit, death to all the brood of lies. Seekest thou the highest, the greatest, in that the plant can instruct you. What is unwittingly is, be thou of thy own free will. That's a pretty profound statement, you understand, that we can compare this to Chazal, very simply. Plants, beautiful, but they have no choice. A human being has plenty of choice. What we can do with our lives. Look at this actor who committed suicide, Hoffman. All of New York, they're not talking about the Super Bowl. I understand it's the most boring game ever played. People fell asleep in the middle. They were so bored out of their wits. People spent millions of dollars on advertisements. They only hoped the audience was still awake. But take a look, Hoffman here. Yeah. Human being, they say, great actor. I don't know, the only Hoffman I know of is Dustin Hoffman, but I'm dating myself. And imagine a man so successful, overdose, drugs. But woman, the soft one, persuasively prayeth, of the life that she charmeth, the scepter she swayeth. She loathes as she looks from above, there's discord whose hell for its victims is gapping and blending a while before ever escaping. And watchful over the golden morning, the mother's love and tiring care, no more with girls content to play, bounds the proud boy upon his way.
Is this the little boy I married? Is this the little girl at play? I don't remember growing older. When did they? What am I quoting from? No, Fiddler on the Roof. Do you know that I had students in this kollel whose parents became from one song in Fiddler on the Roof tradition? In this kollel, Talmidei Chachamim. I can go on and on. It's a magnificent, magnificent talk. What went on in Washington Heights? Do we publish? Don't we publish? Schiller has been the only one to receive the laurels of a whole nation. And why? Because Schiller has given them something more than wealth and treasure. He has given them values which alone endow material possessions with true worth, and by which alone earthly riches attain their true significance for eternity. My dear young friends, boys and girls, that's Yitzchak, your question was just answered. It's Rabbi Hirsch speaking. Boys and girls, these are the thoughts we would like to leave you with today as the fruits of this celebration for your own young hearts and minds. This occasion should teach you to appreciate the value of spiritual riches. Like Schiller, you should resolve to strive after spiritual values as men and women for the rest of your lives. And you should remain friends of all that truly enlightens the spirit and refines the heart, all that makes men more human and civilized, thus also enabling them to remain serene and cheerful no matter what befalls them, and to find it easier to do without the things that life's changes may give them and then take away. Remember how just one single person, without money or other riches, can rejoice and bless a whole world through nothing more than his own intellectual gifts and the moral nobility of the soul. Well, I have to tell you, the only other person that I know who would be capable of saying words like this about some non-Jewish writer, poet, essayist, thinker, philosopher, Baruch Lichtenstein. He could deliver a talk like this. But what a document. What a difference. What different approaches to a Jew in the modern world. What I just quoted from is from volume number 9. Of the collected writings, the final volume. This essay on Schiller is the major essay in the volume.
So do you think it was really delayed because of the controversy, whether or not the...
I don't think, I know from Mr. Jacob Royer, I know from within, absolutely. Now, so you see, this is Reb Mordechai Gifter. These words are so distant from Reb Aaron, from the approach of Torah only. All of you are familiar that Rabbi Schwab wrote a book, These and These, I think it was called, dealing with...
These and Those,
thank you. And dealing with different hashkafas, but you can't criticize why you... Imagine the genius. Imagine the greatness. Imagine Rav Hirsch in front of hundreds of boys and girls, high school kids, impressionable age. Look at the hashkafa he's giving to them. It's a different point of view.
If I may.
But a point
of view.
Shimon Schwab.
When he's... Did he criticize or did he
continue at all? No, I'll put it this way. He never was a total Hirschian in the sense he never got a doctorate. So that already tells you something, a German rabbi not to have a doctorate. But on the other hand, he never could become a total Lakewood person. There was too much of his parents' heritage within him. Okay?
So did he, wait a second, I don't know much about Rabbi Shimon Schwab. Did he have...
Here it's Charlie's rabbi. Well, what do you want to know?
How do you feel about the secular education?
I can only tell you the feeling I got about Rabbi Schwab was lachatchila, a person better to go to Lakewood than to go to Yeshiva University. And that we saw on the ground in Washington Heights. There was, I always tell a story. Let me spend another minute on it, but I want to move into Rav Aaron. I always tell one little story that I was an eyewitness to. Yeshiva University was on Amsterdam Avenue, and the German community was on Bennett Avenue. So we're talking about a 6-block walk from YU to Bennett Avenue, from Bennett Avenue to YU. It was so close, but the gap, the chasm was so far, the ibis, you have no idea. And one little story, standing on Amsterdam Avenue, came out with the Rav. If I recall correctly, we were walking the Rav, we were going to cross the street at the corner. The Rav was staying at his mother's apartment across the street. This was long before there was the Morgenstern dorm and the Reuben dorm. It's the 50s, maybe mid-50s. Now, how did the Rav look? The Rav had a Van Dyke. As a matter of fact, he looked very German. Litvish Rashi Yeshiva had full beards. Right or wrong? The Rav had various periods in his life where he had a full beard in the 30s, then he shaved, clean-shaven. Then when he became the Rosh Yeshiva at YU, he grew a Van Dyke. Tell me, who else walked around with Van Dykes? The German rabbis, the Yekkes. Right or wrong? So this German-looking person, I'll put it that way, with a Van Dyke, sees the Rav on Amsterdam Avenue, and he goes over to the Rav and he asks him directions to Breuer's. And the Rav tells him, I don't know, I have no idea, I've never been there. And the Rav walks away and crosses the street. After we cross the Rav over, we run back and we run up to this guy and we tell him, do you know who you just asked directions? He says, no. So he tells him, first of all, it was Rabbi Soloveitchik, you understand. Secondly, we gave him directions and we started to walk and we told him, walk in a straight, straight, you're gonna dead end, you won't miss hitting Bennett Avenue, and if you don't see the yeshiva, it's on your right, you'll ask someone, but it's right there. But could you imagine, here is Washington Heights, here is the Rav, he didn't even know how to get to Breuer's. 6 little blocks away, on a straight line. But that little incident showed you how much social interrelationships there were between YU and Breuer's. I would say zilch. Occasionally we picked up students from Breuer's, but like their parents were considered rebels. I had a classmate, high school, college, Johnny Prager, famous economic professor, Jonas Prager. Johnny Prager was considered, he said, you know, my parents were looked down upon that they sent them to Yeshiva College and didn't send them on to Lakewood, didn't send them on to Mia. So you see, that all goes back, that German Orthodoxy suffered from an inferiority complex. Rav Hirsch, they accepted, was a b'dieved. Rav Berchber was right. And you hear, you see Rav Hirsch, the greatness, of course. If I got hold of a real right-wing yekker who is intellectually honest, so he would probably say to me, Aaron, you're right. This is magnificent. This is beautiful. This is Yahadut. This is Yahdelokim liyefet v'yishkom v'yalei Shem that Rav Kish always used to quote. Chachma b'goyim tamim. Another Maimon Chazal. But our generation is not capable. See, that's the approach they would take. Doesn't the yeshiva world say that today? The Rambam, how can they deny? The Rambam yells and shouts and screams, if you don't go to work, it's a Chilul Hashem. And he doesn't just say in the Perush HaMishnah, he puts it into the Mishnah Torah, halacha l'maisa, right or wrong. So you show it to a kid, yeah, Nebuch, it hurts. I met a kid Shabbos, I was davening in a strange shul because we were invited out and I wanted to be near where we were eating. So I'm davening there, so this person, it's Rabbi Finkelstein, George Finkelstein, is hosting a whole group of yeshiva kids that he teaches English. Here's a kid, 23, 24, doesn't know English, doesn't know a computer. It's beyond words. The core curriculum, as they call it. What is it? Computer, English, mathematics. You understand? So you'll say to the kids, Rebbe, how did you allow an umglik like this to grow up? How did you allow 100,000 umglikim? How did you allow 500,000? All right. Now, when it's reached 500,000, changes are beginning here. From within and from without. But the Rebbe will say to you, Lo ichshes shadara, the generation is not ready for this broad approach. And he would say to me, he would turn the tables on me and say, tell me, what's better? 500,000 kids who are shomer Torah mitzvah don't know how to learn a daf gemara, but they can't make a living? Or 500,000 kids who would be ice from because they're exposed to Shiloh. Understand? That's their mentality. And that's why I've said a million times over that we in the so-called opener, I would define myself as a Torah Jew in the Western world. We have a great responsibility. We have to be Gaonim, we have to be Tzaddikim, we have to be Hasidim. We have to show them that there's nothing to worry about. That Baruch Hashem, we can come out of the ghetto, and we can be part of the Western world, and it's a global village today. And great in Torah, great in Yirat Shemayim, and all right, we live in dignity. I quote the Rav. All right, I'm not here to solve the problem. I'm not here to tell you there's only one point of view. These and those, okay? But this would be the debate between us. They can't deny Rafesh. They can't deny Shechalach Mechachma told the Reyav. Loich Shiradara. All right. Could be. My dear students, Rabaron Cutler. Again, let me just say, the Hasidic world came to America. The Hasidic world did great things. We're going to spend many, many, many months on the Lubavitcher Rebbe above all. But the Hasidic influence was limited to the Hasidic world. You have to be a Hasid, you have to believe in the Rebbe, you have to be part of the whole Hasidic lifestyle. Lubavitch is a little different because I need not tell you that Lubavitch reached out way beyond the narrow confines of Lubavitcher Chassidim. But their influence in the literature world was very small. The literature world had a negative attitude towards Chassidus. But there certainly was a critical attitude towards Hasidus. Rabaron Cutler changed the course of Torah history in the United States. One little individual. His years 1892-1962, Rabaron, exactly 70 years. Beit Kislev, 1962. That's the day he died, it's the day Rabbi Revel died, it's the day Rabbi Palev died. It's very interesting how many yahrzeits of Gedolei Mabitzei Torah in the United States fall on Beit Kislev. Reb Aaron's childhood, it's not a mystery. He born into a rabbinic family, orphaned at a young age, winds up in Slabodka. Very close to Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who was a childhood friend yet from the streets of Minsk, even before Slabodka. And we do not have a definitive biography of Reb Aaron Katla. We have what Rav Kamenetsky's son wrote, Rav Nassim Kamenetsky, The Making of a Gadol. That's basically the main reason the book was so persecuted and thrown into Cheirim. Part of Lakewood today has given birth to a very extreme position, and anything that challenges that position is condemned. And Reb Nassim, based upon stories from his father, tried to be totally accurate. Then we have a biography by Yitzchak Dershowitz, a graduate of Lakewood. I can show you mistakes, paragraphs that are totally untrue. I mean, the worst example is covering up that Reb Aaron's sister, Malka, his older sister, was a religious Zionist. She was not a religious Zionist. She was not religious at all. She was a communist for part of her life. She taught in Moscow. She taught in Paris. She came to the United States. Reb Aaron brought her here in her old age. She was quite a bit older. And my chaverim used to go visit her once a month to out of covet for Reb Aaron. They went to visit his sister in a senior citizen's home. And Zich Baklup, she cried. I told you more than once, take a look at my younger brother, could have been the greatest mathematician in the world, and what did he amount to? A kleine Rebbe, a little Rebbe. She looked down with disdain, and Reb Aaron was the Gadol Hadar. So he has a line there. How can you write lies? It's an injustice to Reb Aaron, how the man, that was the period. Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, none of his siblings were from. None of his siblings. The Lubavitcher Rebbe. What are you talking about? None of his brother used to figure out when they would finish davening in Tel Aviv, the Lubavitcher Shtibl, he would walk by after the Musaf as they're coming out, smoking a cigarette.
Which Rebbe is that?
The Lubavitcher Rebbe's brother.
Reb
Menachem Mendel's brother, who wound up in England, a professor of mathematics, whose daughter at the Rebbe's funeral, the only living blood relative, was the daughter, was in from England, of this brother. This was the year, and this was the generation. By the way, from Reb Yaakov's family, their grandchildren of one of his siblings, who became frum and very wealthy, they're big supporters of Torah, they lived in the Midwest, I don't know today, but this was the year, but this was the generation. This can explain to you very easily why the Lubavitcher Rebbe was so big in Kiryat Rehoboth. He never broke the relationship with his brother in England. He was constantly in correspondence with him, and he knew how far his brother had gone, but he kept the relationship there. It's eye-opening. Read about it. That this we know. This has been researched. Why do we lack a critical biography of Reb Aaron? See, Art Scroll can't do it. It has a real dilemma here. Too many people know about Reb Aaron, about his sister, sending him a ticket to come to Moscow to enroll in the university. You all know Reb Aaron was already on the, if we can believe, on the horse and carriage, or in modern language, on the bus, on the light rail, whatever you want to call it. He was on his way to Moscow. Reb Reuven Grzebowski convinced him to get off and come back to Slobodka. Reb Reuven Grzebowski was the son-in-law of Reb Baruch Berlevi, which later the Rosh Kollel in Spring Valley, of one of the, perhaps the first Kollel organized in America, a shoot-off of Teira Vadas, Beit Medrash Elyon, if you recognize the name. And everyone knows these stories, so Art Scroll, to publish them, would be put into Cheirim. But to do a biography where they don't publish them, they'd be the laughing stock, because too many people know. I know all this when I learned in Lakewood. I told Reb Shol, I told Reb Nassim Kamenetsky, I didn't learn too much from your descriptions of Reb Aaron, because I can tell you I heard all these stories in Lakewood. They're absolutely true. He was happy, you know, I can certify. But we do need a real decent biography of Reb Aaron, like
Benjamin Brown put out a 900-page work on the Chazon Ish with the imprint of Hebrew U and Kadosh Law School at Yeshiva University, we need a similar biography on Reb Aaron. Maybe it'll be done one day. Now, Reb Aaron visited America in 1935. This becomes very important. He was Klepska Rosh Yeshiva at the time. The story of how he becomes Klepska Rosh Yeshiva is very simple. He married the daughter of Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. And that too is one of the big issues that Reb Nosson Kamenetsky was put into Chevra a million times over, because it seems that Reb Aaron corresponded with his fiancée before they were married. So Rabbi Zalman Meltzer was a little upset. What is this? Chatan v'kala corresponding. This is unheard of. They're not supposed to look at each other, talk to each other till they're married. So Rabbi Zalman went to the Alt of Slabotka, who made the Shidduch, Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel, and he complained to him. And Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel said to him, "Ichabatzu gezagt agom nishtat tzaddik, aber velkumenet zeit wenn de Welt wird leiden von sein Frumkeit." And what Reb Nosson Zvi said was, I translate, I didn't tell you he was a tzaddik, he was a gaon, but there'll come a time that the world will be burned, the world will suffer, the world will be overturned by his Frumkeit. Now, what did they correspond about? So that became a tremendous, their various theories. A guy named Rakefet threw out a theory. He wrote love letters to her. And that's very important. He wrote poetry. He was a poet. Rabbi was tremendously, I mean, I tell you how capable he was. I said, and it's very important our students should learn how to write love letters to their wives to be. Rabbi Yaakov Meir Soloveitchik, Meir Yaakov, I understand, writes poetry to his wife. Why is this so important? Because we have lost the concept of love, the concept of respect, the concept of the man, the woman, the beauty. Al kenya zovi sheta vivi movet avakti ishto vahayula basar achad. So I said, it could very well be if we would live like Reb Aaron Kotler, we'd have a lot less divorce in our world today. So this is a theory I threw out as half serious and half tongue-in-cheek. Reb Nosson Kamenetsky picked it up. He told it to Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, and Baruch Hashem, they liked it. A guy popped up from Borough Park, and he swears he saw the letters. He said he lived, and he knew, and he saw. And the Rebbetzin showed him, and what were the letters about? Reb Aaron was writing to his fiancée a list of books in Russian that she should read. She was into Russian literature. The Rav, when he spoke about Russian literature, he would speak about it like Rav Hirsch speaking about Schiller. The Rav's mother quoted Russian literature extensively. The Rav, Russian literature, ain't kleinekind. So it seems that Reb Aaron's fiance was reading Russian literature, and Reb Aaron gave her advice what she should read, which shows you what he knew in Russian literature. My dear students, can Art Scroll write things like this? And Reb Nosson wrote, they corresponded, they burned the book on the streets of Martha's stuff. It reached the New York Times, like Yehuda, my pal, O'Ravison. Oh, wow. Now, the fact that Reb Aaron came to America in 35, see, he knew the American scene. He was not a total greenhorn when he arrived. He knew YU. Didn't like it. Said his shir there, Bal Kacha. If we can, you know, I write about it in Revel. Rebel Yehenkin forced his hand. I told you the story. They were all Kletzka. Rebel Yehenkin was a Kletzka. Rebbe Zalman Meltzer was his Rebbe. Or Chaver Rebbe Talmud Chaver. Rebbe Aaron Kotler was a Kletzka. Rav Palayev was a Kletzka. So Rebbe Yehenkin said to Reb Aaron Kotler, "Say yeshiva, the Ali yeshivas. To have a college, to have a college. In America, everyone has a high school, so they have a college as well. But as far as a yeshiva,
It's a real yeshiva. So Rabbanan gave a shiur there. He knew Mr. Mendelovich. He knew Torah Vadas. But not only everyone he knew, people knew him. Rabbanan was Rabbanan. When he walked into a room, there was a hush. Everyone turned to Rabbanan. This is the personality. It's Rabbanan. Understand? Rabbanan Kotler. 5'2", 5'3". I mean, short, short man. When I was in Bnei Akiva, I told you, girls mocked my nose. When I go older, I used to say, my nose? This is the nose of Gedolei Yisrael. Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Rabbanan Kotler. You understand? This is the nose of Gedolei Yisrael. You knew Rabbanan. Rabbanan was in the room. There was a bren. His eyes were aflame. He was not diffident. He was not silent. This is Rabbanan. People knew him. Now, it's a terrible problem. The world hates the Jews. Why they hate us? I've lived enough years to understand. We civilized the world. If not for the Jewish people, Matan Torah, the world would be a bunch of monkeys until today. And most humans want to be monkeys. Don't have to tell you. Look at the president of France. It defies imagination. And at least for someone like myself, who I believe is infused with Torah, it defies imagination. President of France. So the world hates us. We gave the world a big gift. We talk about 6 million. It's not just the Nazis. The cooperation, the Lithuanians, the Latvians, the Poles, the Ukrainians. I know people who came from Poland to Israel would never speak Polish again. They said the Poles killed more than the Nazis. I know Lithuanians that would never speak the Lithuanian language again. The Lithuanians killed more than the Nazis. The Latvians, the Ukraine. No, the British. What they did to us. America. The St. Louis boat. You couldn't get into America. You needed non-immigrant visa status. How many Jews, and this is the tragedy, and this is what I tried to say to Rabbi Rubin last week. No one could really understand what was going to happen. In other words, if we know that everyone in this building is going to be killed within a week unless we do something, we will act. But no one could believe it. You read the memoir literature. Read Zerach Vahavtik. Rabbi Dr. Zerach Vahavtik was a goon. It's the Divrei Yeruchim's son, Rabbi Yeruchim Vahavtik's son, was a goon. He knew how to learn. He was bright. He was smart. He was a lawyer. The whole Shanghai rescue was a great deal due to him. He was an unbelievable. So he wrote a memoir. It was a Mizrachiite, so of course the right-wing world plays him down. But you have to give credit where credit is due. So he wrote a memoir, Palit V'Sarid B'Mei HaShoah. Very fascinating memoir. There's an English translation, I understand. I own the Hebrew, I read the Hebrew, I quote from the Hebrew, but I understand there was later an English translation. I don't know what it's called, but Palit V'Sarid B'Mei HaShoah. So he writes that we thought, all right, a few thousand Jews will be killed. There'll be a few pogroms. Won't be any worse than Khmelnytsky massacres, Tat V'Tat, 1648. Won't be any worse than the Crusades. Won't be any worse than what happened in Kishinev. No one foresaw. So the State Department has always been against the Jews, and how do you get non-quota immigrant visas? And they were working against time, the few Jews that cared. And here you have to give credit to the Orthodox Jews. Whatever the reasons are, they were the first to really go to work against all odds, act illegally at times, but to do everything possible to save what they could. Now, a fellow named Rakefet Dash Rothkopf did a volume on Reb Lezer Silva. He was the first one to deal with Hatzalah. If you're familiar with that volume, don't buy it on eBay. It's going to come out again in a fourth edition very shortly. He was the first one to deal with the Vat Hatzalah. But the papers of the Vat Hatzalah were not yet available at that time. They were in storage. They were not made public. Within a number of years, they were donated to Yeshiva University. They were made public, and Ephraim Zuraf of Efrat, I believe he lives, or the Gush, you can correct me if I'm wrong, in that area, could be he lives in Gush Etzion, Rabbi Ephraim Zuraf, Dr. Ephraim Zuraf, whose father was principal of BTA, he did a doctorate at Hebrew U using the Vat Hatzalah papers. He thanked me, or he stood on my shoulders, used what I had, I gave him whatever I had, but he had a lot more. It's a very fascinating doctorate. Again, he criticizes Loki. At times you find on the websites, because on the websites people shoot from the hip. It's amazing to me the garbage that people will put into print. But there's no control. You say whatever you want. They curse, they yell, they shout. I mean, it's beyond words. I'm talking from websites. Torah websites, religious websites, Jewish websites. It's a big problem. I have seen time again people maledicting the Vat Hatzalah. They only worked for the Orthodox. This is so unfair. My dear friends, no one could believe, no one knew, no one understood what was going to happen. It's beyond human comprehension, it's beyond human comprehension until today that every man, woman, and child was executed, killed in horrendous fashions because they were Jewish. That Goebbels, Himmler, others could listen to classic music, kiss their wives, kill their children, and go out and kill another 10,000 Jews. So of course, when the Vat Hatzalah started to work, they started to work to save Adam Korov Esal Atzmo. And I tell you, Bezer Ampin, I can't even, it's not a comparison, but I write about this in Washington. When Malka and I started to work for the Essos family, people said, why did you choose them? Adam Korov, that's the people I met, that's the people I was impressed with. If I'm going to try to save 6 million people, I'll save nobody. Save one family, maybe I'll succeed. We did. But it's not a criticism, it's not fair. When it became clear by 42 that Hitler would kill every man, woman, and child, the Vat Hatzalah then attempted to save everybody. There's nobody to save anymore. You couldn't save. But in 39, 40, 41, yes, it's true. The Vat Hatzalah was organized to save the yeshivas, to save the students, to save the rabbanim. Now, what's unbelievably fascinating, they needed money. They were getting a non-quota immigrant visa for Reb Aaron Cutler. They were going to bring him to America. And here you have the famous story that I will give you many sources and quote a number of times in different contexts. I'm now quoting from the World of the Yeshiva, page 41. Willy Hemreich interviewed Erwin Bunim. Erwin Bunim was a fabulous individual. We'll talk about him in more depth. You've all heard the name. I trust you've heard the name. How many lay people were there in America that were from at the time? Wealthy people. People of means. People of vision. People who cared. He was one of the few. He was a businessman. Clothing manufacturer. clothing, fabric, that's the word I want. Fabric, that was his fabric. He imported fabric, sold fabric. That was his business. So, believe it or not, this is a famous chapter on Shabbos. They take a cab and go to Flatbush. This is Irwin Bunim speaking, page 41. And there are other sources. I'll give you more and more. But right now, page 41. During the war, Rabbi Aaron Cutler was stuck in Russia. I knew about him, so I helped to get him out. What does it mean he knew about him? He met him in 35. You see, people like Bunim, like Feuerstein, these were lay people. They were blown away by Rabbi Aaron Cutler. They saw greatness, they saw sincerity, they saw singularity of purpose. They became his chassidim. I knew about him, so I helped get him out. One Shabbos afternoon, I was sitting having lunch when Rabbi Baruch Kaplan, the name mean anything to you? Baruch Kaplan was a Talmud of the Briska Rav, one of the founders of Beis Yaakov in America. His wife was very famous, Rebbitzin Kaplan. Rabbi Sendelichner, who was Rabbi Sendelichner, a son-in-law of Mr. Mendelovich. They came over to his house on Shabbos in a cab. Rabbi Feinstein, that's Reb Moshe. Rabbi Hyman, that's Reb Shlomo Hyman. Rabbi Mendelovich, Reb Shlomo Hyman, Rosh Yeshiva and Torah Vadas, Talmud Mufaka, Reb Baruch Ber Leibowitz. He dies a few years later. Rabbi Shlaga Feinstein Mendelovich sent them to me in a cab on Shabbos to go and raise funds for that purpose. I think it was 1940. So we went to Flatbush in a cab. They wanted to lynch me in Flatbush for violating the Shabbos by traveling in an automobile. But with the rabbis there, we convinced them. We told them the story. We told them who sent us. This is how we raised the money. We took it to the Joint Distribution Committee and they made the arrangements for a Baron to come to America. So Willie Hellwright asked him, why did you feel it was necessary to go on the Sabbath? For two reasons. First, we needed the money immediately. And secondly, the idea was to create a commotion so they couldn't sleep on it. The second reason, very fascinating. Chilul Shabbos? Flatbush, this is Brooklyn. Brooklyn was always the flimmest borough. The Lower East Side was more than any other place, but Lower East Side was only a little part of Manhattan. Brooklyn had more Shomer Shabbos even in the 30s, even in the 40s, than the Bronx to Manhattan put together. My wife's family is from Brooklyn, and I hear the stories of their youth. I mean, all right, what turned out of the children, the grandchildren, is a different story. But Yom HaChalos Shabbos, that gets around. That a non-religious Jew eats chazer on Shabbos, no one's going to talk about. But that a Shomer Shabbos, Irwin Bunim, should take a cab? This has to be serious. And this is the famous Chilul Shabbos taxi ride that Reb Moshe approved, Reb Shlomo Hyman approved, Mr. Mendelovich approved. It shocks people. They talk. They went to work. Now, Reb Aaron gets out. Reb Aaron comes to America, comes to San Francisco, arrives, goes through America, various stops along the way, speaks. Reb Aaron is here in America. By now in America, there were a few hundred yeshiva light
who had been learning day and night in Europe in Litvashi Yeshivat. Their lives now were badly interrupted. They had no place to go. This is not, if I go back to my lectures of last year, this is not Yeshivas Reb Yitzchok Chanan on the east side of New York, where you walked in 1900, 1910, and you felt perfectly at home because people were sitting and learning the way they learned in Europe was like the outer hang. There was no high school, there was no college, there was no graduate school. It just was a yeshiva. Now, where do you go? Where do you walk in? Yeshiva Reb Yitzchok Chanan uptown, Washington Heights, high school, college. You even had what today is called the Bernard Rebel Graduate School of Jewish Studies, I believe it was called. You were ill at ease. Tel Vadas, beautiful yeshiva, very Hasidic already. Mr. Mendelovich on his deathbed a number of years later made those around him swear Tzal Alamo that signed the Pintel Chassidus in Torah Vedas. Pintel Chassidus. A little drop, an overtone. These were Litvashi Yeshiva kids. Chassidus was not their cup of tea. What else did you have? RJJ Yeshiva for kids. Chaim Berlin, a yeshiva for kids, maybe with a high school already. Where are you going to go? And Rabbi Aaron came. They were dreaming that they could now organize a Litvashi yeshiva.
What year was that?
1941. And they would be at home. They would have a place. And they could adjust to America in their time, at their pace, in their rate. They don't have to be so uprooted. And they even had a location. They even had a location. White Plains. Are you aware of this? White Plains had a location. White Plains was interesting. It's out of the city. A little quieter than New York. A little quieter than the turmoil. Also, no religious Jews there, basically. No machlekes. Wherever you have religious Jews, you're going to come into the Lower East Side with a new type of yeshiva. You're going to come into Brooklyn with another yeshiva. Wherever else are you going to go? There's going to be a little bit machlekes, a little bit strife, a little bit criticism. White Plains? Believe it or not. Who did they get? They wanted Reb Aaron. They were very clever, very smart. These Litvashi Yeshiva boys. Reb Aaron, Kletzkerish Yeshiva, hail, fire, and brimstone. Fabulous. No. He wouldn't budge. He wouldn't budge, and we'll see why. Why'd he come to America? He could have gone to Palestine. They got a visa for Palestine. Reb Aaron faced a very difficult decision. In Palestine, he had Rabbi Zalmelsi, he had his father-in-law, he had his mother-in-law, his wife had a home, they had a home, they had where to go, they would have been welcomed with open arms. He writes Chaim, Sheyurim, Talmidim. Wow. But Reb Aaron felt in America, from there you can attempt to save your following, your Talmidim, your colleagues, the Jews he left behind. Palestine, you don't have much power. It's under the British, it's under the white paper. Immigration is limited. You don't have political impact. America, by 1941, Jews thought they had some impact in America. He chose America. And you have to give Reb Aaron all the credit in the world.
he waived teaching Torah, saying Sheyurim. Could have been the happiest person in the world. Could you imagine in White Plains, he's continuing. No problems. Shalom al Yisrael. Refused. He has one goal, to save as many Jews as possible. So what happened? What happened? Very interesting. Another well-known Yudapayish Gadol came to America in 1941. He was actually saved by Yeshiva University. They worked very hard. They sent them papers. He had a deep connection to Yeshiva University because his Talmud was the Rosh Yeshiva and soon to become the president. And of course, I'm talking about Reb Mendel Zaks, the Radner Rosh Yeshiva, the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law. And Reb Mendel, teacher of Reb Shmuel Belkin, that's the connection to YU. Reb Mendel in outlook was not like Reb Aaron. He wasn't as adamant as Reb Aaron, but he certainly wasn't a YU person, wasn't a college person, wasn't a general studies person. Yeah, Reb Mendel Zaks, I knew him intimately. He comes to America. He goes to White Plains. He becomes the Rosh Yeshiva. So that if anyone is going to ask you, Chesky, going to take what you passed college already, right or wrong, so you don't have to take that exam, but you want to go to graduate school, medical school, I don't know, you're going to take an exam and they're going to ask you, where was the first totally European-like yeshiva established in America? The answer is White Plains, 1941.
How long did it last?
Who was the Rosh Yeshiva? Reb Mendel Zaks. But, interesting. Didn't succeed. Didn't catch on. Reb Mendel Zaks' personality was not Reb Aaron Kotler. Baruch Atah Melech Olam Shekamim. For this yeshiva, you needed someone who was a dynamo. Reb Mendel Zaks, how many of you knew Reb Mendel? Oh, how did you know him? From YU. He later becomes the Bochein, Rabbi Belkin, who was a tremendous Gomel Chesed, brings his Rebbe to YU. And I can tell you, on a bus going to a wedding of a Miri Yeshiva Talmud, had been my Chavruta when I went to MTA, on the bus to that wedding was Reb Mendel Zaks' youngest son, who I believe might have been born in America yet. If not, he came to America very young. It's my age bracket, a little younger. And he was maledicting YU. And we said to him, how do you maledict YU? Your father is the Bochein. Reb Shmuel Belkin is your father's Talmud. Brought him to YU. And he answers without shame, it's a wonderful place from where to get a check. Quote, end quote. So it gives you an idea of what we're talking about. Although I have to say, Reb Mendel had other sons who later opened the yeshiva in Spring Valley and Muncie. They're no lie. I don't believe they're alive. At least some of them already are gone. And they were much, not that they were YU people, but I don't believe they would have spoken so negatively about YU. You can correct me if I'm wrong. So Reb Mendel goes there, 41, 42, 43, doesn't take off. By the end of 42, everyone realized that there was nothing more you could do in Europe. All
gates were closed. Whoever you saved in 242, you saved. 42 on, particularly towards the end of 42, it was a helpless, disastrous situation. And people concluded there was little to do. That's when they came back to Reb Aaron and they pleaded with him, take over White Plains. Reb Mendel has left. Reb Mendel's in New York. Reb Mendel's no longer in White Plains. He's on the west side. He opens a yeshiva katana there, which exists until today. He opens a kollel for kachim, which ultimately winds up in Muncie, part of what his children did there. Rabbi Belkin will soon call him to the yeshiva to become the bochein. Reb Mendel has found his niche. And Reb Aaron now faces a tremendous dilemma. Var Hatzalah or Lakewood? He recognizes that the work in the Var Hatzalah is now more limited. He yearns to get back to teaching Torah. He feels he is losing out on life. If I can make an analogy, the Rav in Boston, the 1930s, had one dream: to be an American rabbi, a Rav like Reb Lazer Silva. His father, Reb Meisher in New York, was suffering. Is this the son I raised? Is this his place in life? Is this his goal? A man who is a goal, not dear, not teaching, not being machadesh, not having students. If you don't have students, you can't. You're not fulfilling your goal, your dream, your abilities. And Moshe finally prevailed upon the Rav to open a kollel in Boston. 39. Branch of the yeshiva, Rabbi Revel, made a whole contract. Abbot and Revel. The Rav was redeemed. Rabbi Moshe was happy. Was the start. He's now a different person. The exact same story with Rabbi Aaron Kotler. And Rabbi Aaron agrees not to leave the Var Hatzalah. This will unfortunately become a precedent for the rest of Reb Aaron's life, that he lives in two worlds. New York, at that time Var Hatzalah, west side of New York, Lakewood, yeshiva, commuting. It's like in America, this is part and parcel of the dilemma of Great Rosh Yeshiva. Think of the Rav. Tuesday morning, flew into New York. Wednesday afternoon, flew back to Boston. Earlier times, Monday morning, his wife drove him into New York. Wednesday afternoon, drove him back to Boston. It's like they had to divide themselves in half with all their responsibility. Reb Aaron never ever was able to live in Lakewood on a permanent basis. Later, when Var Hatzalah ended, the problems first begin with supporting Lakewood. Lakewood is expanding. It's after World War II. The American fellas are coming in. The pull of Lakewood, the pull of Reb Aaron. More than that, Chinuch Atzmai, fundraising, Israel. New York is the hub. New York is the center. How do I know I'm right? And let me end with this. Just last year, the OU caught up budgetary problems. Everyone had budgetary problems. Why you? OU. The OU held the meeting. And they voted to move to New Jersey, a whole new area, office space. One quarter the price. Four times as big. Wow, the outcry, unbelievable. How can you leave New York? How can you leave Manhattan? How can you leave your location? New York is the center. New York is the hotbed. New York is the heart. New York is the circuit that controls it all. And at a next meeting of their board of trustees, the OU rescinded their original decision, and the OU remains in the shadow of 9/11 at the start of Broadway, within spitting distance of the Statue of Liberty, Battery Park, and all that goes with the heart of the development of the great home of the Jewish people, second only to the State of Israel, New York City. So you see, Reb Aaron remains half and half the rest of his life. There's a pro and a con to it, obviously. The Rav, all his mature life, half and half, Boston, New York. Pro and a con to it. I don't have to go into detail. All right, but we're just beginning. Just beginning. My dear students, what did we do today? First of all, we solved the problem of Temple Emmanuel. That is some story, and how it's amazing with the EU. I mean, Chaim Schnitzer is in Montreal, if I'm not mistaken, and he reaches Philip Fishman someplace in Massachusetts, and he reaches Aaron Rakefin. It's unbelievable what a world we live in. But the $2 fine is rescinded, but it shows you when you write a memoir, this is why I call Washington to Washington a scholarly memoir. Every word I have in Washington has been checked to the end. I don't depend upon memory. I don't believe there's one factual mistake. And for a memoir, that's pretty good. So, you understand what I'm saying. Then we went into to Reb Mordechai Gift, and that's Tells, and that was Reb Aaron's influence. Imagine, Tells reaches a point, you can't go to college. And that criticism of YU, very fascinating. But if you're going to criticize YU, criticize Rav Shemshon Rafal Hirsch. If you have the guts to do that, Rav Hirsch. And I ask you, who is right, who is wrong? Come on. Shecholak mechachmato lebas of Adam. Who is right? Who is wrong? Isn't there beauty? So, I have to tell you, from the Lakewood world, if you talk with someone who knows, understands, he will agree. You're right, in theory. But we can't put it into practice. The generation is not on that level. Have you heard that? Have you heard that? That's what you want to hear in relation to here. Now,
Does it have to be either or?
Have any of us said the either or? We try to synthesize. Rav Gifta said, I don't like the synthesis because it compares the general studies to the Torah. All right, I always
say that Aaron Lichtenstein is a failure.
So they'll say Aaron Lichtenstein is the exception to the rule that proves the rule. You follow? Who can be like Rav Aaron Lichtenstein? What, we're like Reb Aaron Lichtenstein? We sat there in the class with him. He knew all of Shas when he was a kid. Do we know all of Shas now? We're old. We're in our old age. Come on. I'm trying. I'm trying my best to know all of Shas. But I still got a long way to go. Baruch Hashem. But one thing I do tell you, I know a Reuven. That much I know thanks to you. Baruch Hashem. How to prepare the shirim. I'm still working. Baruch Hashem. So a Reuven at least, I can understand a little bit. Anyway, coming back here, so Reb Aaron Kotler, I gave you a little bit of his youth. Now, what I'm going to do, I'll talk about Lakewood. I'm not going to go chronologically, because I just want to describe his personality and how Lakewood got the impact. Then we'll go into the Bar Hatzalah, and you'll see Reb Aaron at work, you'll see Reb Aaron in Europe, you will see some magnificent stories that give you the image of Reb Aaron. Okay, so that's what we did today, and next Sunday, Be'ezrat HaNatein LeYoav Koach, we begin the people, the Gedolim, in favor of the Erev in Brooklyn, and we'll see where that takes us. Very fascinating. We'll start. It's going to be many weeks. We're going to have to spend
on Rav Menashe HaKatan, Rav Menashe Klein, but first I want to deal with Rav Kasha, I want to deal with Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, and then we'll move further. Freebies. If anyone is interested, Rabbi Lyman, Lerman upstairs, Mark, our Talmud, has resigned, as you know, as of February 28th, I believe it is. So in cleaning out his files, he found an article that I wrote when he was one of the, on the editorial staff of Geshe. This manuscript has to be about 30 plus years old. If anyone wants it, you're welcome to it. It's the way a manuscript looked before computerization and the kadoshim status of the Holocaust victims in the Holocaust. Ah, and this later appears in print and appears in Rakafet Aaron. There's a whole story behind this because the original volume was not circulated, Geshe, because Rabbi Chalap had an article in which they printed Jesus with CH spelled out. And people said, how can you circulate something that yeshivas published, Jesus, our Messiah, CH? So it was never circulated. So he didn't even know that there were some copies printed. I got hold of a copy, and that's how I got it further. I have another copy of the interview with Rav Moshe Lichtenstein. It's a fabulous interview. He is a credit to his parents. A beautiful article on Rav Zion Shenka of Majitz. Chabad articles on Rav Yo Kohn, a sikha from the Choseh on serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Naped piece on Yair Gate, a rural problem. This is also from Chabad. The whole problem today of Yair Netanyahu going seriously with a girl from Norway, I believe it is. And a very interesting article. An article that appeared, I believe this appeared in Haaretz, in their English website, that the report by the Israeli Shin Bet on what's going on in the Temple of Mount was buried by the Israeli government for political reasons. Finally, it appears. Here, attacks on modern orthodoxy and what's going on with women on tefillin, the Jewish press article, who speaks for modern orthodoxy? Women and tefillin, a study in breached boundaries by Rabbi Avraham Gordima, if I'm pronouncing it right. Could be. And finally, if you're interested, another article on a Reuven in Brooklyn and Queens and the Machlaikis and what goes on. This is from the Erev Hotline website. And let me wish everyone well until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya. Thank you.